Welcome to Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla, Chorus Director and Associate Conductor at Vancouver Opera. Join me for this bi-weekly podcast as we connect with opera experts, artists, staff, and others to explore the world of opera on and off the stage. We are honored to share our stories on the unceded homelands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Today, we'll be speaking with Hungarian-Canadian mezzo-soprano Christina Szabó from her home in Toronto. Highly sought after in North America and Europe on both opera stages and concert halls, Christina has an impressive repertoire ranging from Bach to Claude Vivier, as well as several world premieres, including George Benjamin's opera Lessons in Love and Violence, which was nominated for a Grammy Award. She last appeared at Vancouver Opera as Donna Elvira in the 2014 production of Don Giovanni. Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast. Today, it is my great pleasure to speak with friend and colleague and fellow Hungarian, Christina Szabó, who has just recently been appointed as Assistant Professor of Voice and Opera at UBC. Welcome, Christina.
Szia, Lottikám.
Szia, Christina. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm awesome, and I'm so thrilled, as I know everyone in this city is, about your appointment that was just made public. Welcome. We can't wait to have you in Vancouver. Please tell us a little bit about what this is going to look like, especially during COVID-19 and all the things that you're going to be up to in the immediate future.
COVID-19 has thrown everything up in the air, and we're still waiting for things to land, I think, at universities across Canada, especially for music faculties. We have unique requirements, and in-person teaching is obviously the ideal and the wish and the hope for everybody, but whether that's going to be possible is still TBD, I think. I'm still very new at UBC, so I don't know everything that's going to be happening. For the fall, my intention is to start the year in Vancouver. So I fly out from Toronto, where I currently live, on September 1st, and I will be there to start the year, meet my students, hopefully do in-person lessons, but I will be doing some online teaching as well as a result of COVID.
Yeah, that certainly is the new reality, isn't it? I imagine the last few months you've had similar Zoom sessions with people, all kinds of things that you probably never did before, right?
I had never heard of Zoom before March of 2020.
Yeah, same here, actually. It's very funny. Why don't you start off, if you don't mind, by kind of taking us back? How did you get interested in music? And when did you know you wanted to be an opera singer? How did you get here?
Well, I don't come from a particularly musical family, but my parents, both being Hungarian immigrants, grew up in a small town in Hungary, and they all did musical theater. They did operetta in their hometown. So they had a love and appreciation of music, and they recognized in me, I think, musical ability. And so it was one summer, we were visiting my cousins in Ottawa, and they had just started taking piano lessons, and they informally started, you know, teaching me a few things. And I picked it up so quickly that my father was like, well, we should get a piano and start the piano lessons. And little did he know that that would lead to a career in music. I think he thought and hoped that I would be a doctor and have a nice grand piano in the front room, which I would play for my guests, you know, and that kind of thing. So I started taking piano lessons at the age of 9. At the same time, I used to sing all the time and, you know, the little plays and musical things at the school. And my grade school teacher had gotten a letter from the Toronto Children's Chorus. They were recruiting children to join, and she put me forward for an audition. So I went for an audition for the Toronto Children's Chorus and joined that at the age of 9. So everything started for me at the age of 9 in terms of musical training. And I was in the Toronto Children's Chorus for 6 years, and that really changed my trajectory, I think. We worked in so many different languages, and we toured all over the place. And Jean Ashworth Bartle, who was the founder and artistic director at the time, she recognized ability in me and would put me forward for solos almost from the very first year. We did a workshop of a Ruth Watson Henderson production called Clear Sky and Thunder, and I was the Anchorcock, and it was, you know, it was a good part for a little kid. So it certainly sparked interest in me, and it was my first love for sure. Choral music and the Toronto Children's Chorus were the first place that I felt like I belonged, really, because at school I was just the weird kid who liked music. So, you know, in the Toronto Children's Chorus, I was appreciated and I found like-minded people. So, and then the piano continued on. I took private lessons from the age of 9 until I went to university, and when I decided to go to university, I was debating because my parents obviously wanted me to be a doctor of some description. And I had the marks to go into medicine, but it wasn't really my interest. My sister was an actuary. I briefly debated on whether or not I should do that because I was strong in maths as well. But in the end, I thought, what do I love to do? And I don't know where that thought came from because it certainly wasn't from my parents. It's not what you love to do. It's what earns you the good money. So I decided to go into university for music and as a piano major. So I did my audition as a piano major, going to University of Western Ontario a very long time ago. I think 30 years ago. Yep, 30 years ago this September. So not feeling old at all.
I'm older than you, so you'll always be so much younger. But the years go by quickly.
They do. They certainly do.
So at Western, you were studying piano.
Yes.
And then?
And then, yeah, I had always wanted to take voice lessons. And my parents had briefly entertained the idea of me taking voice lessons in high school. They approached the Royal Conservatory and were told that they should wait till I was 16. And at the time I was also taking violin lessons too. So I was already, you know, between the piano, the violin, and the children's chorus. I didn't have a lot of extra time. And because they said, wait till 16, I went to university at the age of 17 because I finished a year early. So they thought, oh, well, when you get to university, we'll try and find you a voice teacher. So I got to Western and you have to audition for an ensemble and audition for the choir, obviously. And Daryl Edwards was a teacher there at the time and he's now at the University of Toronto. He took me aside after my audition. I said, do you take singing lessons? And I said, no. And he said, would you like to? Yes, I would, please. Thank you very much. So I started taking lessons with him on the side on Saturday mornings. He did private teaching, and I can't remember the name of the conservatory, but it wasn't on campus. And I started taking lessons with him privately. And then by the end of second year, I decided I didn't want to be a piano major anymore, although I loved my piano teacher, Damiana Bratu. She was actually a Bartok specialist. Wonderful lady. And even she was very supportive of me changing to voice because she said, you know, there's great music in you, but I think the voice is where it expresses itself the best. And certainly it was much more natural for me to sing than to play piano. Piano terrified me. Performing piano, forget about it. It was terrifying. So I changed to voice in third year. I was still a music ed major. So the plan was to become a teacher at the very end of this. But in fourth year university, I got all sorts of performing opportunities. The opera started at Western that year, and we did Vaughan Williams' Riders to the Sea, and they wanted a double cast. So they didn't have another mezzo. They wanted to cast in the role of Moira, the mother. And so they asked me to do it, even though I wasn't a performance major. So I was Moira, and that was wonderful. And they did Durafle Requiem. I was the mezzo soloist for that with a symphony and combined choirs that year. And then I started to audition for Britton Pierce School of Music and the Tango Music Center. And I was getting into whatever I auditioned for. So I took that as a sign. And so the story goes, my parents know this now, but the plan was always to go to teacher's college after I finished my 4 years. And I did my due diligence. I applied for teacher's colleges and I got in. But in the meantime, I had decided that I wanted to pursue performing and perhaps go and do a master's in performance somewhere. And so I don't know why I thought I wouldn't get into teacher's college, but when I did get in, I lied to my parents and I told them that I hadn't gotten in. And so I had to take a year off and I would pursue other things. So they bought it. I don't know why, but they bought it. So I took a year off after I finished my undergrad and I worked. I stayed in London for half a year and then I went home to Mississauga for a half a year. And then I auditioned for master's programs. So I auditioned for Eastman School of Music, University of Michigan, and Guildhall School of Music and Drama, where I ended up going for what is called the post-diploma vocal training program. So by the fourth year, I had gotten the bug for performing as a singer. So I think that's where I decided this is where my future lay. But I don't think I actually knew what it meant, you know, to have a career in performing. I just threw myself into the abyss and hoped for the best, I think.
Oh my God. I mean, how many of us had any idea, right? I mean, can you imagine if you knew what it did involve and all the ups and downs? I mean, would people still throw themselves into the abyss? So it's a good way of putting it. And I'm sure that the world lost a fantastic teacher and doctor. Dr. Sobo, I think I knew a few Dr. Sobos growing up. But
sure.
I think you made a very wise choice, even with all the uncertainties before and now and moving forward. But it is an incredible thing. So Riders to the Sea was your very first operatic role.
For my very first operatic role, yeah. I had done a Gilbert and Sullivan production, The Yeoman of the Guard, in third year, and I actually played the character of Phoebe. But yeah, for the first operatic role was Moira in The Rise of the Sea.
Right. And I love the fact that you said, well, you lied to your parents. There's been a couple of times on the podcast, it's almost like a truth serum that we reveal secrets on this show and people unwittingly spill the beans. So that's very funny.
It's funny because my very first feature in Opera Canada, I was interviewed by Paula Citrin and I told her that story. I did not think that that story would make it into print. And it was my very first feature, you know, that I can't remember, it's called a Young Artist Spotlight or whatever it's called. And so I told my parents I was being interviewed for this and they were very excited and waiting for the publication to come out. And then when I read it and I saw that that story was in there and I had not told them at that time that I had lied about the teacher's college thing, I hid it from them for months. You know, it's a quarterly magazine. So, it's not in this season. It'll be next season, Dad. And they kept thinking, why is it being delayed so much? And meanwhile, I'm totally hoping they forget. They would never forget. So eventually I just blurted it out to my mother. Okay, the article says something you don't know yet. So they took it pretty well.
That's kind of rich. But of course they included that. People love stories like that. That's awesome. And so may I ask, who have been some of the most influential people in your career then and moving forward past that point of studies?
Yeah, I mean, I've already mentioned two of them, Jean Ashworth-Bartle and the Toronto Children's Chorus.
Yep.
Absolutely. And then Daryl Edwards completely changed the trajectory of my life. So, and continues to this day to be one of my biggest champions. And I'm forever grateful. He's been my colleague at the University of Toronto for the last 7 years. This would have been my seventh year. He put me forward for the position there and he was incredibly supportive of me going for this position at UBC. So he's been wonderful. And then, you know, I was a young artist at the Canadian Opera Company. So Richard Bradshaw was a huge influence in my life. When I arrived there, I was not a known quantity. A lot of the other singers had come from other programs, had been to the University of Toronto Opera School. I was not one of those people. I was coming from the Guildhall. They didn't know who I was. So I wasn't given great opportunities in my first year of the ensemble studio. I did a lot of chorus stuff and I did the Berta cover, for goodness sake, in Barber of Seville. But then our very first production as an ensemble studio was Cavalli's Giazzone, and I played Medea. And when Richard saw me in that and the success I had with that, it changed his mind, or I became more, I don't know, present in his mind. And then from then on, he gave me incredible opportunities within the Canadian Opera Company and then continued to support me beyond my time in the COC. At some point, I mean, they kept rehiring me for the ensemble studio shows as well as main stage shows. Everyone was like, shouldn't you be hiring other people? I was like, give some other people a fair chance. I mean, there were wonderful mezzos as well. Like Alison McCarty has been there a lot as well, but I felt a little like I was a little greedy, but I will take the work. Thank you, Richard. And then beyond Richard, Bernard Labadie was another one of my big champions, especially early on. He gave me my first opportunities outside of the ensemble studio, outside of the COC. I did a lot of work with Les Violons du Roi in my early years, and he hired me as a guest soloist on projects he worked with other symphony orchestras. So he was a very, very big champion of mine. So those, I would say, are the main ones that stand out.
You are honestly one of the most versatile singers I know. Most people either get pigeonholed, even if they sing a lot of different things, you're hired to do everything, which is an amazing thing. And it's because you do it all so well. Talk to us a little bit about when you see Bach or when you see Schoenberg or George Benjamin on the page. What does it do to your brain and your heart?
What does it do to my brain? The first thing is that it was hard to pigeonhole me as a voice type. I was always a mezzo-soprano that sounded a little bit like a soprano. So there was great debate early on. Are you a soprano? Are you a mezzo-soprano? It's hard to put me in a box. So I think my choice of repertoire and my willingness to do anything was based on, I just want to keep working and you can't put me in a box. So I'm just going to pick all the boxes that I can so I can keep working. And also as a daughter of immigrants, the work ethic, I watched my parents work two jobs all the time and just to make a good life for us in Canada. And so I knew I had to work and I am willing to work. We actually used to joke at the COC, you know, Richard used to hire a lot of Eastern Europeans because of their willingness to work. They are workhorses, you know, and I feel a little like a workhorse. So my willingness to do anything, I think, and to try anything. I also don't have any ego about it. I've talked to singers who are like, this is my repertoire. Why? Why would you limit yourself? I like to do everything. I mean, I like to do it well as well. I don't want to just do, you know, a half-hearted job on everything. I am a bit of a perfectionist on that as well. So, but I also genuinely love to figure things out, which is why the contemporary music has really fallen into my lap, because I have a facility with it. I look at the music and I just like to figure it out, like a Sudoku puzzle and how it works, and to hear the composer's voice. And I've been told by even George Benjamin, who I adore, I think the highest compliment he gave me was, "Christina, I've never heard it sung more beautifully or more accurately." Yes.
Wow, sweet.
I was pretty chuffed by that, I have to say. So accuracy is definitely something you'll get from me. Even the Schoenberg Erwartung that I did, the COC a few years ago, I worked my tail off on that. And I have a very good relative pitch, so that doesn't hurt. But attention to detail is kind of my thing. So do I have a favorite? I mean, I do love contemporary music, but I absolutely love Baroque music. I do. I don't do a lot of romantic repertoire, but I will if I want to. I usually do what people hire me to do, for sure. But my heart is Baroque and contemporary, absolutely.
But if anyone that is hiring right now is listening, you just heard it here. Christina's very open to the 19th century and all the treasures that exist in that time.
I will sing anything you like.
You mentioned Erwartung. That is just a really, really crazy piece. And it's a one-woman tour de force, right? 30 minutes of nonstop singing. Give us a little bit of an in as to how you pick that apart.
I pick it apart page by page, to be perfectly honest. I always do a sort of assessment of a score when I get it. I flip through it. And it's definitely a sense, how long is this going to take me? How long is this going to take me to learn? How long is this going to take me to memorize? With Erwartung, because I'd never done anything of that magnitude, of that complexity, I wasn't sure how long it would take me. So I gave myself plenty of time and I set myself a plan. I think being very regimented is very helpful, maybe not to everybody, but certainly to me. So I set myself a schedule. We started rehearsal, I'm trying to remember, I think it was in March. It was the spring production. I started in September. I worked with Don Tarnowski in here in Toronto, coaching it. I think I met with him at least once, maybe twice weekly for 2 solid months. And he's also a very regimented coach, gave me goals. So we're going to do this amount of pages today. These are the pages I'd like you to memorize by. And I set myself also goals of memorization as well. And with me, repetition is always key. So in the repeating of everything, eventually it just suddenly it's there. Suddenly it's there. And the music is so stinking hard that by the time you've learned it, you've almost half memorized it anyway. So... And with Don, he was so wonderful about getting that score in my body in a total way, orchestrally, just making sure I knew all my entrances. Where am I going to hear my note from? And again, relative pitch is helpful, but also, you know, in the moment, things go wrong. You're distracted by, I don't know, something that's happening on stage. You have to know your way back. So I think I was memorized by the new year, because I think I was in Calgary in January and I thought, oh, there it is. It's in my body. And just kind of, I knew that it was there. And that's an exciting feeling because I honestly wasn't sure that it would. That one was daunting, but it was very satisfying when it was in.
Like you said, it's something that is so tricky through sheer repetition. The memorization does its own thing, right? It's not a separate process. But is this something you would like to do again after, you know, having invested so much time and energy? Is Erwartung a show that, you know, you would love to be singing all over the world?
Yeah, I would, to be honest. I would love to do that particular production again as well. It is quite simply one of the most incredible productions I've ever done. So yeah, I love it. I would do it again for sure in a heartbeat.
People like Lepage are such wizards.
Mm-hmm. And I think that production is particularly aged well because I was the cover for Judith in Bluebeard in the companion opera of that show in 99. So I remember being amazed by that and then to have it come back and it hasn't lost any of its power, I think, that production particularly.
100%. And that piece too, I think you told me once you've sung Bluebeard with Sam Raimi.
I have.
That's a nice thing to have twice. Oh, wow.
Chicago Opera Theater did a production of Bluebeard's Castle. I can't remember what year. It was after my daughter was born. So I think it was maybe 2008, something like that. I don't know how they got him. It was incredible to sing with a living legend. It's pretty sweet. So we did it there. I think we did 5 shows at that time. And then we did it recently in Colorado Festival, they had a bass baritone who was coming from Hungary and he didn't get his visa in time. And so they called Sam and he was available. So we did it again in concert. It was amazing. Yeah, it was incredible.
Well, maybe could we talk about one more composer that now you've worked with, I think, a lot, George Benjamin, right? You've sung all three of his operas.
Yeah.
You're the only person I know who's done that. And for our listeners, I think the big breakout piece was written on Skin, which premiered almost close to 10 years ago in Aix-en-Provence. And I saw you do the concert performance of that with George Benjamin conducting at the TSO a few years back at the New Creations Fest. That led to Lessons in Love and Violence, right, which you did at Covent Garden, got recorded, nominated for a Grammy. And then I think, was it a year or two ago, you got a call to do Into the Little Hill, which was his first opera, which isn't as well known, but a miraculous piece. I remember listening to not that long ago. And what's it like working with him?
I adore George Benjamin. He's incredible. Personally, I have to thank Barbara Hannigan for actually bringing me to his attention, because when they were casting for the TSO Toronto Symphony Orchestra concert, she was the one that recommended me for that production. And so anything that happens after that is thanks to Barbara. So that was wonderful. I was most nervous to work with him that first time, for sure. My very first rehearsal with George, he's a very fastidious man. And if you look at his score, it's very detailed. And he means absolutely everything he writes in his score. So you better do it. But not to the detriment of the emotional journey. He wants every version of the emotion in your voice as well. So it's not, you know what I mean, robotic in his details. So that very first rehearsal, it was 2 hours long. It was me and Isaiah Bell. We were Angel 2 and 3, Angel 1 and 2. We were two angels. Anyway, and because we sing mostly together in Written on Skin. And I thought, oh, 2 hours. We don't sing 2 hours of music. How can we possibly last for 2 hours in a rehearsal? Well, George, full 2 hours. I've never sweat so much in my life. I was pouring sweat because he worked us, trying to get the voices matched, trying to get every last detail of everything he'd written in the score. And I thought I had done a good preparation job on that score, but he wanted even more. So it was very nerve-wracking. And, you know, he didn't smile much at that rehearsal. And I thought, oh, maybe he doesn't like me. And then he gave me that compliment, what I told you earlier about it being beautiful and accurate. And I, because I'd worked so hard, you know, and tried to really give him what he wanted, I've never felt more elated in my life when he gave me that compliment. So yeah, so that was a wonderful first experience. And then, you know, when he asked me to be in the premiere of his new opera, I was over the moon. You know, at that point, how old am I? I have to think about it, 47. So I made my Covent Garden debut at 44, 45, you know, kind of given up on that dream a little bit. So to be asked by George Benjamin to make my Covent Garden debut is pretty sweet, I have to say. So, and George, he's such a love. He's such a dear, dear man. I mean, musically will work you, absolutely. But he also knows when enough's enough. You know, we had a full week of music rehearsal and he rehearses very efficiently, uses people only when they're needed. Yeah, he's wonderful to work with. And on top of that, he has a sweet tooth. So he would always bring in these lovely chocolates and cookies and treats for us, which was absolutely lovely. So we did the Covent Garden shows. And then we also were in Amsterdam following that. And that was wonderful as well. And then he had asked me in the middle of that, would you consider doing my other opera, Into the Little Hill? And I didn't know anything about it. I said, George, I'll do whatever you need me to do. But I looked at the score and it is contralto. So as I said, I am a high mezzo and I wasn't sure if I could do it. There's not one, but two, possibly three low E's in the score of Into the Little Hill. And I've got a low E, but mostly in the morning, especially when my daughter has to swim at 6 a.m., if I wake up at 5 a.m. for those 6 a.m. drop-offs, I've got low E's. I've maybe even got a low C. However, in concert performance, no guarantees that low E is going to come out, especially as most singers will tell you, as you warm up, your voice gets a little bit higher. So I was genuinely concerned because there's one low E at the very tail end of the piece. So I wasn't sure that it would be present. Fortunately, he does know how to write for the voice. It didn't have to be super, super loud. And by that point, he knew my singing. So, and if George thought I was capable of doing it, then I knew I was going to be able to do it. And I love, love that piece. It's a remarkable piece. Actually, he asked me to do it again. And sadly, I was not available. Although I don't know if anything's happening anymore. So But I am supposed to do a tour with him in January, which seems to be going forward, of Lessons in Love and Violence. So we are supposed to do a little concert tour in Germany in January, which allegedly is going forward.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for that. Well, I hope that that tour in Germany really happens. Of course, right now in Canada, where most things are shut down, symphony orchestras, opera companies, recital series, if you are able to speak to this, do you have anything coming up more locally in terms of live performance in the next little while?
Well, Leslie Dalla, yes, we do have something coming up in live performance. UBC has asked me to do a recital. And so who better to do a recital with than my fellow Hungarian Leslie Dalla?
You're so sweet.
So we're going to be doing a piece that I debuted with the Canadian Art Song Project, Miss Carr in Seven Scenes by the wonderful Jeffrey Ryan. So that will be on our program in November. And that will be live streamed because COVID. So that is something I'm doing with you in November. Before November happens, I'm actually doing a new commission in Quebec with a wonderful composer from the United States who's Jewish. His name is Yotam Haber. And I'm doing a cycle written by him for mezzo-soprano and chamber orchestra. And it's called Estro Poetico Armonico 3. And the texts are by Ori Bernstein, Eli Eliyahu, Israel Bar-Kohav, and Aaron Shabtai. I hope I pronounced those all correctly. I apologize if I did not, but it's a wonderful, wonderful work. And that will also be live streamed. So those are the things that are happening this year for me.
Oh, that's great. Is that a world premiere or has the piece already been done? It's a world premiere. Okay. So it's being written specifically for you.
Yeah, it was written for me. Yeah.
I'm very excited.
I have to say that never gets old when things are written for me. That's pretty exciting.
I bet. What other pieces have been written for you?
What other pieces? Well, the Jeffrey Ryan was written for me. George Benjamin's Lessons in Love, that role was written for me. I've done a bunch of tapestry opera repertoire that was written specifically for me. Mostly tapestry opera things. I'm trying to remember. Oh, also Queen of Pudding's Music Theater. Anna Sokolovich, we did a few things with Anna that were written specifically for me as well. So I'm forgetting things. Ian Cusson wrote a song cycle for me as well. And his new opera, which was supposed to be happening at the COC this fall, which will be put off for a little bit, also was written for me. So yeah, please keep writing for me, composers. Oh, Dean Bury, I should mention. Dean Bury is also written for me a bunch as well. So
that's quite a nice list.
Yeah.
What do you miss most about live performances?
What right do now? I not miss about live performances? Mm. I have to say, I miss people. I miss people and being able to rehearse with people. I think for me, the rehearsal process has always been the most connecting process. The figuring out of a score together, the making of music together, is really quite special. And it's hard to explain that to people. And live performance and just that wonderful feeling of everyone in the same room experiencing this incredible thing. Everyone takes something different away from it. But we are all connected as human beings in that room as we make music and listen to music. I miss all of it. So I'm going to try not to cry about that, but yeah.
Yeah, so true, right? It's the magic that happens. It's very hard to put into words, but when things are really firing on all cylinders, there really is nothing like it. We started the interview, I introduced you as the new assistant professor of voice and opera at UBC, and we've mostly talked about your performing career. I'm just thinking how lucky these students are to work with somebody like you, who again has sung so much great music of such a wide range all over the world, and you've worked with some of the greatest colleagues, composers, conductors, directors, other singer colleagues. What are the most important things you want to pass on to your students?
Oh my goodness. How many things? I think the versatility, I mean, if COVID has taught us anything, is that we have to remain versatile. And anyone who works in the arts has had to be versatile in some way or another. We have to be extremely flexible, figuring out a life that is never the same from one day to the next. So what that versatility means in life after Corona is going to look different. So I think we still have to teach good vocal technique. That's paramount, obviously. Good musicianship, obviously. But that versatility, work ethic, those things are not going to change. But what that looks like is going to be evolving. So I'm looking forward to what the students actually have to teach me as well. I think what I've been learning the last few months as we all sort of take a look at the world and what's been happening around us is that there's so much to learn. And there's so much to learn from the young as well. you know, at a certain age, you know, not that we all get set in our ways, and I do pride myself on, you know, being flexible and trying to change with the times, but everyone has to learn something. And I want to learn alongside my students, as well as guide them as best I can with my experiences and strengths and what I have to offer them.
Well, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for your students. I'm excited for UBC and for the city, having you be a part of being here more often. And I'm still looking forward to our recital in November. And I think Wesendonck, leader of Wagner, will also be on that program, right?
Yeah.
You just did those with the esteemed conductor Donald Runicles at the piano, right?
I did.
Roy Thompson Hall, which is kind of a nice thing to have on the resume. Have you sung the orchestrated version as well?
I did, with the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony. I did that a few years ago. It's a remarkable piece. And to do with Donald Runicles, it was actually one of the last things I did before the end of days. It was quite a meaningful set at the time, and I'm excited to do it again.
And I look forward to that very much. Christina, thank you so very, very much for taking the time to speak with me. And we're so excited to have you come out to Vancouver. And I look forward to seeing you very, very soon in person. All best wishes in the meantime.
Thank you, Les.
Join us next time when Vancouver Opera's Director of Learning and Engagement, Colleen Mabin, will return to the host's chair with a story from Vancouver Opera's longtime community partners, the Kettle Society. She will be speaking with composer Leslie Sutherland, alongside members of the Kettle Society's Choir and Writers Guild, about the Can You Hear Me project and the importance of community arts in times of trauma. We'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback or suggestions for upcoming guests. You can reach us via email at online@vancouveropera.ca, and don't forget to check out our weekly special features on our website at vancouveropera.ca/offstage. This has been Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla. As always, you can keep up to date with Vancouver Opera at vancouveropera.ca, where you can sign up for our e-newsletter or follow us on social media. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.